Hello, hi, I'm Rachel and welcome to the Feeding Curiosity podcast brought to you by Bibidoo. I'm a mum of beautiful twin girls and when they were little I often really struggled to find practical and useful tips to point me in the right direction. And that struggle led me to create the Bibidoo coverall to help keep me sane at mealtimes, especially with my very enthusiastic twin girls who really like to go to town with their spaghetti bolognese. So that's why we're delighted to bring you our new Feeding Curiosity podcast series. We'll be bringing you some of the top tips from leading experts in childhood development and feeding to help you on your mealtime adventures. So sit back and enjoy a cuppa with us as we dive into the wonderful, curious world of babies, their development, and how you as their parents can be their biggest cheerleaders at mealtimes. So without further ado, I'd love to introduce to you our very first guest. Welcome to the show, Lucinda. We're so delighted to have you. Lucinda Miller is a naturopath with over 20 years of experience, a mum of three, so she has been there and done it. So Lucinda, can you just tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Hi, Rachel. It's fantastic to be here on your very first podcast.
Thank you.
So, yes, I run a wonderful team called Nature Doc, and we specialise in nutrition for babies and children and mummies as well, but mainly babies and children. And we help kids that have allergies, fussy eating, eczema, developmental issues, etc. And we help to make them the best versions of themselves.
Oh, fantastic. And I know you've mentioned before you've written a few cookbooks and a really recent one as well.
So yes, I wrote The Good Stuff a couple of years ago, which is a family cookbook for 18 months plus. And then I Can't Believe It's Baby Food was published last May. And that's my sort of weaning book for babies and toddlers. And it's full of really fantastic, nutritious and delicious foods, but with all the allergen swaps as well. So if a baby does have an allergy, then you can still cook them nutritious, yummy food.
Oh, fantastic. So as this is our new podcast, we wanted to take it right back to the very beginning of a child's feeding journey and obviously the parent for that as well. So the first question I really wanted to ask, which I think I probably didn't know the answer to when I started out on my weaning journey with my daughters, was why are mealtimes and early food adventures for babies so important?
Well, first of all, of course, it's building a wonderful relationship with food, because you know, if you love food, you're going to be sitting around the family table, you're going to be building relationships. So going forward, it's a wonderful way to bring the family together. And we all know that food's really nourishing as well as being delicious. But from my perspective, I find it really, really important to get the right foods in early, because food is there to nourish the brain, the immune system and the gut health. And if you can get all three together, then you're going to have a really strong, robust child who's going to be able to navigate all the stresses and ups and downs of life.
Yeah, yeah. And I think sometimes as a parent, that can feel like, I mean, that's quite a daunting task, isn't it? To sort of think, oh my goodness, that's a lot of responsibility on me. And so it's sort of ways of sort of like breaking that down a little bit to make it seem more like bite-size and manageable, that, you know, parents don't feel kind of overwhelmed with that level of responsibility.
Sure. Sure. Well, really what it really starts with is cooking from scratch as much as possible. Now, I know you can't do every single meal and pouches are super helpful, but really you're going to get a lot more nutrition if you cook it from scratch, because you can throw in more ingredients. You can throw in different vegetables and nuts, ground up nuts and seeds or meats or fish or where, you know, to really build in that nutrition. And you know, as I said, we all use pouches sometimes, absolutely fine, but a lot of them are very fruit and vegetable based, which is great. But that means that there's not very much iron, zinc, omega-3, which are very, very important building blocks for immunity and for brain health. So that's why I encourage parents to cook from scratch really early on. And yeah, it's also to encourage different tastes and textures as well, because the baby food that's made by a manufacturer is going to be super smooth. It's all going to be a very consistent texture, and that can lead to fussy feeding later on, because they get so used to everything being the same. Whereas, you know, even if you do the best, smoothest apple puree, there's still going to be a lump or bump in there, or a slightly different taste. Every apple tastes a little different, for instance. So it just brings a variety in. But as I said, those key nutrients are so important. And, you know, things like pulses, meats, eggs, etc., all contain, and nut butters and ground up seeds and things like that, all contain zinc and iron and all these important omega-3s and omega fats, which are so important for the brain and the immune system.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's such an interesting way to sort of look at food, as sort of building blocks as opposed to just filling me up, because I think that's probably where I sort of felt, you know, I've got to fill my children up, but actually sort of giving them nutrition is a slightly different mindset, isn't it, to that. So if I sort of move on to the next question, it's sort of when you're thinking about beginning weaning, what are the sort of the top tips you have for parents before they start weaning and begin their mealtime adventures with their babies? Because, you know, how do you kind of know when they're ready, you know, to, and as a parent, ready to embark on this next part of your parenthood journey?
Well, the most important thing about weaning is that your baby is ready to eat, so that they're not going to choke on what you give them. So this is where they need to be able to sit up, and then they have this thing called a reflex, which they basically push their tongue out of their mouth, and when that goes, they're able to then swallow. So you'll notice when your baby's quite little, it pushes everything out of the mouth other than the nipple or a teat from a bottle. But so that's a moment where they can basically essentially sit up, be able to eat something and swallow it without it sort of, you know, getting stuck.
So it's kind of like an inbuilt safety mechanism.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, clever.
Yeah, it's really clever. So those are really, and that can happen any time between about 4 and 6 months. Sometimes babies are even a little later than that, depending on their development. So it's but it's usually around that. And that's why the NHS recommend 6 months. But some babies are ready sooner. And it's really to see, you know, where are they going with their development? How strong are they? My other tip is just to be sort of a little bit prepared. So to think, you know, I'm going to maybe start with vegetables. Now, what you can do, which is great, is you can use broccoli or carrots or whatever you've eaten the night before, because you've steamed it or you've boiled it. And so as long as it's super soft, then you can smush it up. You can also actually give a floret or a very, very soft carrot baton, put it in their hand. Now, they'll probably drop it, but they might try and put it near their mouth. And that's, you know, that's all an adventure and it's exciting. So they can have mush and they can have handheld food right from the start.
Yeah. And I know we've had a bit of a conversation before this podcast, and what you told me about the sort of the squish test. And I thought that was really interesting. So, yeah, can you just explain the squish test?
Yes, the squish test is super important. Basically, what it means is when you steam your veggies, you've got to make sure that you can squish it between your thumb and your forefinger and see if it's soft enough, because if it's soft enough, then it's going to be soft enough for their gums or their teeth to be able to munch down on and not choke.
Yeah, because I remember very clearly trying apple with my daughters, and the apple went in and they had it in their mouth and they just could not squish it with their teeth or their gums or their tongue. They just weren't ready. So that would have been a really useful tip for me to know, actually, if I could squish it between my fingers, then yes, absolutely, they could have eaten that.
So what you would have done probably would, you would have peeled the apple and you would have steamed it in slices, and then they could have held it, and then it would have been soft enough. Okay. Apple, unfortunately, is one of the biggest choking risks, because it's quite hard. So I found even when my babies were even 13, 14 months, they were still slightly, they didn't necessarily choke, but they gagged a little bit on it, because it was, especially with the skin on. So I think peeling and steaming lightly. And also, if you've got slightly steamed apple, it lasts for longer. It doesn't go brown and icky as well. So it looks
it doesn't look appetizing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so sort of what kind of foods would you, obviously we're saying apple, maybe not one of the very, very early foods, but what about, say, what foods would you kind of consider as those early foods? So broccoli.
Yeah, absolutely. So the first 2 weeks, I'd say, is all about sort of experimenting and introducing different colours, different flavours, different textures. And I'd say that vegetables are a really good way to start, because if you think about it, kids later on down the line don't particularly like vegetables often. So if you can get them in early, those early taste exposures will mean that they're more likely to like them further down the line, because they're just used to them. Their brain goes, oh, this is food. So it's important. I'd start with veg, as I said, but you know, it could be courgette, it could be broccoli, it could be cauliflower, it could be butternut squash, it could be carrots. And again, they could be smushed up into puree, which is easier for the baby to eat for sure, but also for dexterity is to do the batons or the florets.
So then, a bit of a combination is probably quite a good, like hybrid, like maybe put some steamed carrots that they can squish and then have something that is definitely pureed to actually get it into their mouth. Is that kind of like a good sort of compromise to do kind of both things?
It is, and it also keeps their hands occupied, because very often they'll put their hands in front of their face, so it's quite hard to get a spoon in. Sometimes I give them a spoon and maybe a broccoli florette in the other hand, so they've got something to do, because then it's easier for you to get a little bit of food in their mouth. So it's sort of lots of reasons, really. It's coordination, it's keeping them a little bit distracted so that their hands don't get in the way, so that more food gets in. But it's all meant to be an adventure. It's all meant to be fun. And I think it is more fun if they feel more independent when they've got something in their hand, you know. And, you know, some, as I said, you know, sometimes they do drop it. So it's quite good to have a mat on the floor. And you've got your lovely bibs, obviously. Which help to catch a lot of
stuff. And it, I mean, it's funny, my my nephew's actually weaning at the moment, and they keep sending me photos of sort of the amount of sort of stuff that they discovered sort of in his lap, the bibs caught. And then actually sometimes he kind of looks down and is like, oh, I might give that a try. And then they sort of rediscover it. So you're wasting a lot less food as well, and certainly keeping them clean, which is great.
Absolutely. So I'd start with those, but also you can have fruits as well. So you could, as I said, you could do an apple puree or pear puree. You could, and then raw-wise, you can have smushed up banana, smushed up avocado. So those are the sorts of foods you probably want to try in the first couple of weeks. Then literally after that, all you really need to think about is, might they be allergic to a food? So it's quite good to introduce all the high allergen foods one by one. And they need to have those twice before you'll know they're for sure not allergic to the food.
And should you be careful about the amount that you give them? Do you generally do a small amount or just what you'd regularly choose to give? Or
with the allergens, it's not, unless you really, really know this, allergens are very, very high risk. It doesn't matter. An allergic reaction will be one where it doesn't matter if it's literally just been exposed, that spoon has touched something with egg or nut, or whether it actually has egg or nut on the spoon, or how much it is. So it's all when immune system's decided it's allergic to something, it's really highly sensitive, and it could be such a tiny amount. So it's not so much the amount, but you probably want to introduce those one by one, over probably a few weeks. And that's, you know, everything from eggs to ground up nuts. And obviously ground up nuts need to be things like nut butters, because those are smooth and easy to get in, and so forth. But then after that, really, you want to get cracking with as many meals as possible. And you want to bring in the pulses, the meats, the eggs, the chickens, the fish, you know, all of those things are super important to bring quite fast, because of these key nutrients that we need to get into the baby's brain and immune system and gut health.
I think that's such an interesting way of thinking about it, is that the variety is part of the broad range of nutrition, as opposed to you want your children to like lots of foods, but actually you want them to like them because of the nutritional value that they bring them to help them grow and develop. I think it's just a slightly different mindset, isn't it? But it also, they feed off each other really well. So can I just ask you about sort of, you know, there are sort of some do's and don'ts, aren't there, in weaning? Like, when you're starting, what things should you definitely not do? Because I know this, all parents want that kind of reassurance of like, I'm not going to do these things, but I know I should do those things. So can you just sort of run us through those, the sort of do's and don'ts of starting weaning?
Yes, of course. Well, first of all, the biggest risk is choking. There's a difference between gagging and choking. Gagging is you will hear the child go like this, and you'll probably they'll be sort of look like they're sort of being sick a little bit, and they might go sort of quite bright red in the face, and that usually means it will come up. However, okay. If they go really silent, then they might be choking, which means it's stuck down their throat. And basically, they have very, very tiny hole that goes, in their mouth, it goes down the throat. And it's about the size of a grape. So that's why grapes are really dangerous. Whole grapes are very dangerous to a baby. So you need to quarter those. Same with tomatoes. Again, quarter them. Whole nuts, anything that is going to get caught in the throat. So this is why most parents go with the smooth puree approach, because they know their baby's going to be able to swallow that easily. However, handheld, sort of squishable, fairly soft foods, whether it's a piece of toast, whether it's a piece of omelette, whether it's, as I said, the batons and florets, are going to be absolutely fine too. It's just really those smallish pieces of food that could easily get caught in the throat. So you definitely need to make sure that those are smushed up somehow, or very, very soft and incorporated in the food. And then the other two things to avoid before they're 12 months are honey, because it can carry a bacteria that can cause illness. And then the other thing is too much salt. So it's not no salt, but it's not very much salt. So you need to go for things like low salt stock cubes and things like that. I think Marmite's not a good idea until they're over a year either, because it's pretty salty. Because that can, in some babies, harm their kidneys. So you just have to be a little bit careful. But other than that, they can have literally anything, as long as it's safe to eat, i.e. easy to swallow.
That's really useful, sort of like just information for us to all have in our armory. And then sort of, I know you sort of alluded to this a bit earlier, sort of like those principles about, you know, what should we try and do? So it's like cooking from scratch because you're getting more nutrition in. And are there any other sort of general principles that we might think about following?
Well, if you think about it, if you went to any supermarket, whether it's Aldi, Lidl, Waitrose, wherever, you'll find that most of the baby food that's being sold is organic. And there's a reason for that, is because the pesticides on the conventional food, it can be a little bit harmful to babies' brains. Now, it's fine to have it sometimes, of course, and I know that they're much more expensive to buy organic food. So basically, try your hardest to buy organic if you can. And if you can't, then peel the apples, peel the carrots, basically peel the veg, so that that's taken away the layer which is more likely to be exposed to pesticides.
Okay, that's really interesting. And is there sort of... So when you're cooking from scratch, sort of combining foods together, do you sort of have... You obviously have that double win of... Do you want to put as many different flavours as you can in one go, or is it better to sort of introduce those kind of individual flavours at a time, or are you trying to sort of get a broad range in quicker, or do you have any sort of tips on that?
So in terms of flavour, babies are usually absolutely fantastic. They love lots of flavours, probably not hot chilli, but they love all the things like cumin and coriander and cardamom and fennel. They love all those tastes. There's been a study on garlic, and that if you eat lots of garlic when you're breastfeeding, then babies will love garlic going forward.
Oh, really?
So, the more that, you know, the different foods that you eat when you're pregnant, when you're breastfeeding, is super important too, to help your baby's tastes. So, taste is not a problem. It's texture. That's what they usually reject. So what you'll probably find is they're not particularly good on lumps and bumps. So they're fine if it's sort of whole and they can chomp on in, and they're fine if it's super smooth, but something in between, often they do reject the lumps. So just be a little bit careful with that, just to begin with.
Yeah.
But it's also good for them to realise there are lumps in food sometimes. So, you know, don't be super, super on it. And that's one of the reasons why I'm not so keen on bought food, is because it's too, as I said, too uniform in terms of its texture.
Yeah, that's really interesting, actually.
Yeah, so it's always, nine times out of 10, when we see a very selective eater in our clinic, it will be texture over taste.
Oh, that's so interesting. And actually, my daughters, we had a bit of a win yesterday. We got beans into them for the first time in ages because they were just texture, 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 no, no, no. And we were like, go on, just try again. And they were like, yeah, actually, they were pretty good. But it's taken a while, you know, to get them to really think, actually, no, I do like this. And it was all about texture when they were little. They couldn't bear the texture at all. So yes, I think I've had a small win there with textures. It's well taken done. Me 11 years, that's but awesome. I've got there. Yeah, 11 years later and I've got there. But you know, I guess it's persistence, isn't it? You just don't keep trying because one day they'll say yay.
Yeah, absolutely they will. And I think that's the biggest issue. And I know we're talking about tiny babies now, but a lot of parents give up once their kids have got to sort of 8, 9, 10. They just go, oh, well, they just don't eat veg. But you've got to keep on trying. And even if it means that it's sitting there on the table, maybe in a salad bowl or, in, you know, just not even on their plate, they've been exposed. And one day they will eat some and they will probably enjoy it more than they expect.
Yeah, that's the, well, I can definitely... That definitely happened to me yesterday, even actually last night. So I'm thrilled. And so I guess that kind of leads on to the sort of next question, which is how do we reassure mums and dads out there that they're doing a really great job weaning? And what are your top tips to make it less stressful? Because, you know, we've all been there when the spaghetti bolognese just, you know, drops and you've spent ages cooking it and your heart sinks. So are there any top tips you could give us?
So... I think there are sort of three key things. First of all, be really prepared. So if your baby's napping or even the night before, get organised with the food, because it's really hard to prepare it when it's sort of one-handed and they're sort of, you know, they're in what, you know, you're holding them at the same time. So that's one tip. The second tip is to eat with them as much as possible.
Yeah.
And I always suggest that breakfast is a good time to do that, because that's at the beginning of the day, everyone needs breakfast. And I know that lunch can sometimes be difficult to coordinate because they're having a nap, maybe over your normal lunchtime. And again, in the evening, sometimes they need to eat early to begin with, and it may not be the right time for everyone to eat together. So breakfast is a really good time to eat together, because if they see you eating, they'll be much more likely to be more adventurous. And it's all about these adventures that's so important with food.
Yeah. And I think that really resonates with me, because sort of in the morning, everyone's refreshed as well, aren't you? No one's feeling tired.
Exactly.
And we've kind of slightly discussed this, that some babies are pickier than others. Is there anything that you can, I know we've sort of talked about texture, but is there anything we can do to really help? And sort of why are some baby, I know you've said, sometimes it's to do with texture, but are there any other things that can cause picky eating? And is there anything we can do as parents to sort of try and help us on that journey to make it easier?
Well, a lot of the time they become picky once they've been unwell, and because that can really knock out their sense of taste and smell. It can really knock out their immune system. Tummy feels a bit out. So this is why I'm such a fan of these three key nutrients. So zinc is super important. It's really important for building immunity, but it also helps to build all your gastric juices and your sense of smell and taste. So if you've been through a period of illness, immune system's down, you might well be low in zinc, and then that might shut down the gastric juices, sense of smell, taste, so the kids get more drawn to the beige foods. So zinc is something that can sometimes stimulate that and bring it back.
I did not know that. That's so interesting. Yeah.
Super important. The other thing is iron. So again, why I'm so keen on iron rich foods early on is because a baby's iron stores start to deplete from about 6 months. So, and that's why you need to start replenishing it through diet. Now, if you're lacking in iron, you can feel rather sick in the tummy, low appetite, quite apathetic, quite tired, and quite grumpy, because iron helps to basically transport oxygen around the body and into the brain, so it sort of perks you up, gives you energy, helps your brain to feel all perky. But it can also really affect the digestion, so if they're low in iron, then sometimes they go off their food as well. They might sort of look hungry, then start eating and then just push it away. And then the third thing is, if they've been
just ask you a quick question about that. How much iron do babies need on a daily, weekly basis? Because what foods have got iron in them that, you know, we can sort of tick off and make sure you're getting those in?
So it's about 7 to 8 milligrams a day. And those come in beans, especially things like chickpeas, black beans, kidney beans, lentils, etc. Meat, things like liver. I know it's not everyone's thing, but you know, it is very, very high in there. Things like apricots, spinach, kale, broccoli, eggs. So in quite a lot of the really good nutrient-dense foods.
Okay. Sorry, and then I interrupted you. You were about to say third point, and I just interjected with the questions. Sorry.
This is super important. So often when kids are unwell, especially if they have bacterial infections, they're put on antibiotics. Antibiotics are lifesavers, amazing. However, they wipe out all the bacteria. So not just the infection, but also the beneficial bacteria, the microbiome, which is in the tummy. And those are those little critters in our tummies that basically help to digest food. And they're the ones that eat the food, essentially. So they need nourishing. Yeah. The trouble is, if they're depleted, then there's going to be less sort of want, I guess, to eat that food. But also a disrupted belly can also just feel quite awkward and quite uncomfortable. So again, imagine if you've had a gastric upset. The last thing you would possibly want to eat is like a Sunday roast. You'd be like, oh, yeah, too rich. All you want is really toast or something really dry, maybe banana or yogurt. And if you think about it, that's what selective eaters often go towards. It's the dry, crunchy food, the yogurts, the bananas, sort of easy to eat, easy to settle food. Yeah. And actually what we do is to encourage that return to their previous style of eating, yeah, is to put in things like probiotic supplements, but also if they can have dairy, things like kefir and live yogurt to try and replenish the good bugs in the gut. Then that will help the digestion to feel more comfortable. If the tummy is more comfortable, then there's more likely to eat, and also that's nourishing all those microbes that will say hunger, 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 and want to have lots of different foods.
Okay, God, that's interesting.
It's super important.
Yeah. Right, so final question, and this is a question we're asking all our guests, so you're the very first person to give us an answer to it. What is your top tip to make mealtime adventures for both parents and babies more fun?
I think sitting around the table together and eating together, and that's okay if your little one's sitting on your lap and just sort of picking at what you're eating, that's okay too. Make eating social. Just try and eat as much together, because that will really nourish that wonderful relationship with food in the very long term.
Yeah, I really like that, because actually fairly early on I used to be making the girls' dinner and then mine and my husband's dinner, and I just didn't get out of the kitchen. It was just, I was permanently feeding. And actually when you suddenly eat together, it's just so lovely. And I think I wish I'd started that earlier actually in the journey. So I think that's a really lovely tip. So we did have some we did ask our audience what they would like to ask you. So I've got some quick fire questions.
Okay,
are you
great.
Ready? Okay, so quick fire questions, here we go. Number one, what do I need to look out for with allergies or pickiness?
So in terms of allergies, the key allergens are, as I said, nuts, eggs, dairy. Those are the key ones. There are other ones as well, like shellfish and so forth. But, you know, those are the key ones. So really, I think you'll know straight away if it's a proper allergy, as in your baby might, have swollen lips, have difficulty to breathe. So I would say that, if you have a high risk allergy baby, then be near a hospital or have an antihistamine with you just in case.
Yeah.
In terms of pickiness, I hope I've covered that.
Yes.
In terms of the zinc and the iron and the probiotics, but those would be my first three steps.
Yeah.
And also meet them where they're at. So if they like beige foods, make things like waffles. So in my recipe books, there are waffles, there are muffins, there are really yummy sort of beige foods that kids absolutely love, but in them are things like courgette or carrot or ground up seeds and all the nutrients in there. So you know they're having a full meal, even if they think they're just having carb.
Yeah, it's kind of like the best kind of tricking them.
Yes.
Tricking them with love. Okay, next question. My baby only likes bananas and carrots. How do I get them to try something new? That's a really good question.
It is. So what's a good idea to begin with is say, okay, he only likes carrots or she only likes carrots. So I'm going to produce carrots in lots of different ways. So I'm going to do batons, coins, puree, and just see if you can encourage a slight change. You then think, okay, which you can get sometimes, things like purple carrots, yellow carrots. And then with the banana, you can slice it and then you can put things on it. So it could have some peanut butter or a blueberry on top, just to try and encourage a different sort of presentation of the same thing.
Oh, fab. Yeah, that's
great. You just build. It's all about little tiny building blocks. So it's all about tiny changes. But if they only eat those two foods, then there might be something else going on, as I said, in their gut or with their nutrition that needs sort of perking up first. And sometimes what we find is once you get some zinc in for a few weeks, just everything changes and it's so much easier.
Wow, that's interesting. I really like the idea of like taking tiny steps and not expecting it to be fixed overnight, because not many things are they? It's sort of going in the right direction and forward progress. Okay, question number three. What recipes are good for the whole family and how can I best adapt them? I don't know, this is what I just said, I don't want to cook twice or three times for, you know, for one meal.
So yes, that's exactly what I Can't Believe It's Baby Food is all about. Basically, they are family meals that everyone can eat, and there is essentially, you know, a way to make it for a baby, for a toddler, or for an adult. So you can make one meal and everyone can enjoy it. Or it might just be part of a meal, you know, or it may be a smoothie bowl, which you can have at breakfast, and you guys have a much larger bowl, maybe with some extra granola and things in it, whereas the baby would just have the small amount.
So it's kind of just like siphoning off the bit, and maybe sort of that you could build. So there's a base that they can have, and then you add the bits to make it more grown up on, sort of on the side kind of thing. I like that idea.
Exactly. So you add a little bit more salt and pepper, some more herbs, maybe some chili or whatever it might be to make it, you know, more adult. And it's also about, you know, how much you swish it up. So you might start with like a really lovely sort of beanie stew or a beanie sort of soup. And for the really, really tiny baby, you might mush that up in the NutriBullet and then give it to them. But with the adults, obviously, you would still have the chunks.
Yeah. Fantastic. That's the end of the questions. So as we are nearing the end of our podcast, we all know that parents very rarely have time to sit down to have a nice hot drink or a cup of tea. Hopefully, everybody listening today has managed to make a little bit of time for themselves to do that. But Lucinda, what would your choice of drink be in that instance?
So my favourite cuppa at the moment is rooibos green tea, because green tea is so good for our health, but I can't handle too much caffeine because otherwise it makes me a bit wired. So the combination of the two is great because it's caffeine free and it's the green tea, which is good for the antioxidants.
Great choice, Lucinda. And we've got a little something to send you. We've got a Love Curiosity mug and notepad winging its way to you. Thank you so much for being such a fantastic guest and sharing so much amazing information with us. We really, really appreciate it. And best of luck with the book. It's fantastic. And we'd love you to come back in the future. And for those that are listening, please let us know what you think of our podcast. And if there's anything you'd like to find out that we haven't discussed or you're interested in, please let us know. Drop us a message on Instagram or Facebook and subscribe so you can keep up with the next episode when it comes. Thank you so much. Bye bye. Bibbidoo, bibbidoo.